well, I'll just take the fries and I'll just throw them in there. This is where that nice golden crunch is going to come in. And there you go. Almost a perfect looking fry.
What up, guys?
This is episode
26.
Yes, 26.
Okay. Starting to get our numbers right, guys.
Welcome to Road Fries.
Hey.
All right. If you were to have any career, money isn't a factor, so it's just whatever you would want to do for a living, job-wise, what would you do?
I think off the bat, money not an option. If it was, like, sudden, I would probably, like, build some weird stuff. Like, I would, like, obviously quit my job, but I'd probably, like, open up my own place and, like, work on custom stuff. I don't know. I've always, like...
A fabricator of sorts?
Yes. I've always enjoyed the fabricating aspect of, like, car building and stuff like that. Like, I'd like to, but I just don't have the materials, time, and, like, the know-how, you know? But, like, if that were an option, like, learning to, like, make your own frame, have, like, a frame machine, like, the rotisserie-style ones.
Yeah, like, with all the proper tools
stuff. I'd probably end up buying, like, a kit car, like a Cobra. And like, those Cobra kit cars, and then just build one. And just put an LS in it just to make everybody mad. And then it would be, you know, like stuff like that. That would be interesting at first, like learning, like making your own brake lines, fuel lines, like, you know, from scratch. That would be something that would be cool. I mean, it'd be like a hobby, but I think that it, I wouldn't mind investing in something like that. Like, oh, custom shop, like let other people work and me just be in the back, like building my own crap.
Yeah.
And just there for emotional support.
I think I would do astronomy.
Really?
To go back on the space thing. Because space is cool. Like, looking at, like, nebulas and shit, that'd be cool. Like, if that was...
But that would be a career decision.
Yeah, that'd be a career decision. Because if money wasn't, like, an option, and it wasn't like, oh, you're going to make
this much money. Oh, that's true. That's another thing I didn't
think about. Yeah, because, like, if money, like, everything's paid for.
Like it's not something that you're like, oh, I'm going to do this job for money. Like, no, you don't need to do it for money. Okay. Then maybe...
Would you become your farmer that you always aspire to be?
No. No. Because that's always cool as like as far as like maybe doing it for one day and learning it, but not something where like I'm going to wake up every day and like go feed the chickens, the pigs, and all that. Like I wouldn't be.
No.
That wouldn't be a choice where – because I feel like a lot of farmers, it's like you don't have that. You don't have a choice
for the most part. You're raised up that way and it's generational.
Unless you go out and you buy a farm and you decide to do it. But it's like – a lot of them, it's like generational. It's like, oh, it's my parents' farm. You know, they pass it along to me or I got a certain section of it. And
yeah, and you just kind of kept it going.
Yeah.
You grew your okra.
But let's see. No, not that. So I was thinking like a vet because I like watching the vet shows.
Yeah.
But there's like certain things of the animals that I'd be like, that's gross.
Yeah, I don't want
to
do that.
I don't want to squeeze their anal glands to, you know, like, well, because they do all that and it's just like,
ugh, yeah, you don't want to deal with the animal butts.
I don't know. No animal butts in my future past. Maybe, yeah, like astronomy sounds good.
Astronomy, not astrology. We want to make that clear.
Yeah.
You want to do tarot cards and read signs for people.
I mean, if I knew what that was all about, but I don't really care about it. Yeah. But yeah, maybe that. Maybe what's another one? Maybe like working in like an engine building place. I think like that would be interesting. Like that'd be fun. Like I don't know what their pay is. They probably make good money still, but it's like going in and kind of like what the local like engine shops do, like go in and hone motors. And like I always like those videos of them flattening the heads.
Oh yeah, when they like when they're decking the surface.
When they decking the surface and all that. That would be cool.
Yeah,
because I like I've watched a few things on like that, and like they explain like the torques and all that, and like the leveling of it, and each specific thing.
Torque plate before they hone it, so it's true. And, when
to it. And like all the machining of it is cool. Like it's interesting. Like it'd be cool to learn that. Like some machining, I guess. Like that'd be fun.
I think that or kind of with what you were saying, but not with what you were saying about like working in a shop, assembling like one-off cars, like being on like the special line that makes like GT3 RSs or like Koenigseggs or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like a rare supercar.
Or like even being on like the Ferrari line, dude. Because those like, they do like... they still do them like individually. Like they go through one by one when they make them. Yeah, they
have the name on the placard for whoever actually assembled the motor. Like, yeah, that would
like
be
cool. That would be cool.
It's like, yeah, you work at a factory, but like you're like kind of a specialist.
Because like what like the stuff that I do, like I'm always like getting dirty, like mm-hmm. which is whatever, you know. You come to being mechanic stuff, like
get dirty.
You get your, you know, you're always dirty. You're working on stuff that's like older and like you got to replace it, and like so like when the times that I've worked on something that's new, like I've worked on like new cars mm-hmm. to do simple stuff, whatever. But like the times that I've worked on those, it's so much nicer to work on like clean vehicles.
A bolt.
It's like
not
it's
rusted.
Like never been rusted. Like take it off. Like it's all smooth. It all goes back together as planned. Like there's not a lot of problems. You're putting new parts in, so like you're not like sitting there rebuild this little cylinder or something like that. Like it's all new. So that would be just cool. Yeah, to know that everything's gonna fit.
Even like the body itself hasn't been tweaked from just like.
Yeah.
Daily bumps on the road to where like this isn't exactly true like it should mm-hmm. be.
Yeah. Or this part hasn't had rust ran through it and now you gotta like cut the bolt out in order to get it out. Like
I watched a dude
no, you're good.
Off subject. I watched this dude, he was rebuilding the front end of like a Cummins diesel mm-hmm. and on the control arm, not the control arm, the steering knuckle, the ball joint had worn the steering knuckle so bad that like even if he put a new one in, it was still gonna be loose. So he had to take and make a custom like brass sleeve. That he had to like, get really cold, and then he heated up the knuckle and slipped it into where it was tight fitting, and then he had to like re-drill it just to get it to fit. And I was like, that would be kind of fun to do that if the proper tools were there and I had like the proper shop and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be laying in my driveway doing that while I'm on the ground.
Well, that's what I'm like. I don't want to like be doing this stuff on like my personal car that I have to get running by tonight or else I'm going to have to like be late to work or use my wife's car, you know, like,
and then have to shuffle that.
Yeah. Out. Like yeah. It'd be something that it's like, I'd have the car on stands and it'd be down to the frame and it'd be like every single little bolt is clean and like buying hardware individually. Like that would be cool as hell. Like, yeah. Like doing that. And it's like, oh, let me measure out the seats that I'm going to put in there. Oh, I need to sit
precision.
In it. I need to sit in it to know where I want myself positioned in the car. Like that would, the whole process would be cool as hell.
Yeah. Like a custom fabrication.
Oh yeah.
Like when Discovery was doing, like when they went on that whole like thing and like Orange County Choppers was like brand new and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I lived for those. I
oh yeah.
Was all the damn time.
Oh yeah. When they first started off, like it was interesting.
Before it became like the drama reality TV and it was just about the fabrication.
That was cool.
Did you see, I don't know if you saw it or not. There was a company, like unrelated, kind of whatever.
Hmm.
There was a company that made a special 10-to-1 header for the V10 BMWs.
10-to-1?
10-to-1. So both banks float into one, and like you have to remove the engine to assemble, like to put it in there because how it sits. I'll find it and tag you in it. It's a work of art. Like I don't want that car that's related to at all because if that's just the exhaust, it's going to be a pain in the ass to work on. Hmm. But, like, it would be a cool, like, it's in my garage.
Yeah.
Like, on the wall. Because it's all...
10-to-1, too. That's nuts.
Yeah, 10-to-1. I'll tag you in it. It's really good looking.
That's crazy.
But, yeah.
Like, those... Like I think that's... That's art that I don't think gets appreciated enough. Is, like, fabrication work. Like, you see these people do these, like, crazy welds. Like, titanium and, like...
TIG welding titanium. So satisfying.
And you just see it, dude, and it's, like, it looks... It's art. Like, you put that on a motor, like a custom piece like that, and everybody's going to be like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Just like, for example, that exhaust manifold or whatever. It's...
Like, when the ram horn exhaust manifolds first came out.
Oh, man.
Cars, oh, those were wild.
That was the coolest thing ever.
I'm like, wow.
I was like, I need that.
I don't know what I'm going to put it on, but I need it.
Yeah.
Nothing I own is worth that, but yeah.
Now but now, like, and now it's like...
knockoffs that are like yeah. $150.
But, like, to me, it's, like, still seeing those, like, custom pipes that, I like, certain cars have. I'm like, geez, dude, like, you tend to appreciate it a lot more when you understand, like, the process of, like, what they do. And it's like, geez.
The process and understanding that they get, like,
the know-how. Flow. The know-how.
They need to have the flow of the exhaust hit the turbo in a certain way so it's not causing, like,
mm-hmm.
jumps mm-hmm. in air pressure.
Jumps in air pressure. And it's like, everything's got to be equally, like, the harmonics of it. Like, there's things that, like. These engineers that I think it was like Borla, they've come up with like they custom build their resonating chambers in like a certain way to where like the exhaust sounds different, but it also like helps the engine back like the back pressure perform in a certain way and like the way their chambers are. It's crazy,
yeah.
But like they explain the science behind it. I'm like to understand like harmonics and like back pressures and like. This is going to cause your car to like pull more straight You know what I mean? Like, to understand that, it's nuts.
What is it that... Because that goes back to, like, just things built right with, like, the... What was it? Like, the things built and engineered right, like, to understand, like, how the flow of things and how vibrations work. Mm-hmm. What is the Toyota Vita, the 1UZ or whatever? Where, like, it idles and you can put, like a dime or whatever, or a nickel on the intake manifold.
And it won't move. And
it just stands on edge and it won't vibrate.
Because the motor's so balanced.
Yeah, so balanced.
Like, yeah. But back then, they would, like, used to cast the pistons and cranks. Like, when they first started building cars, like, Model A, Model Ts, like, it was all, like, cast in, like, with, like, pottery and, like, stuff like that. Like, they were actually making their casts for their cylinder heads. And, like, it wasn't machined with, like, these super CNC machines. Like, their blocks were all, like, hand machined.
Yeah, and then, like, what was it? The Model T didn't even have, like, counterbalances on the crank.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how, like, it, but they made it work. And, it, like, they drove everywhere in them, dude. Like, that was it was a car.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Oh, man. Simpler times.
Yeah.
Probably had a lot less vibration than a horse.
Ooh. Not a Clydesdale. If you could do a hobby.
A hobby?
Yeah, a hobby. No money isn't a thing. Hobby. Would it just be the fabrication and stuff? Would it go back to that?
No. I think like a hobby, like I'd like to be part of like a racing team. That'd be fun.
Actually drive the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like or be involved in like any part of it, dude. Like just like imagine just being part of a F1 team and like randomly whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Like even just being involved in it would be fun. Like learning. Like doing I wouldn't mind changing tires out. Like
I think it would be cool to do what the dudes on Top Gear / Grand Tour do. Like it would be cool to just get a group of people. Like, all right.
Or two people.
Yeah, two people, three people, whatever. And just be like, all right, we're racing to Luxembourg today.
Or just, yeah, yeah.
Last one there has to buy everyone tea.
Or it's like being, just showing up to your house and being like, all right, I got these two cars dropped off. We're going to go and race, like, whoever can make it to, like, Alabama first wins.
Or no, like, go. The Bolivia special.
Yeah,
so they start off in the rainforest with these like 3 4x4s, and they have to just drive to the coast.
And they drive through the freaking forest. Like there was a one where like that it's like a giant hole, and they put one of the cars in there to hold up the other two, and it gets stuck in there.
Yeah, I think they're in Colombia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's where they came across the Pablo Escobar's hippos.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But those dude, like, see, like that, like. That's the example of just, like, doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
And having fun, and everybody likes watching it. Like,
yeah.
And that's what I hope that you all are getting from this, because I'm enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely fun. The fact that people listen to it is just mind-boggling.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, well,
especially from down under.
Yeah, I was like, wow, we literally have now officially gone around the world, because not only are you on the other side of the planet, you're also in the other hemisphere.
What would you do if you saw one that said North Korea? People's Republic.
Wonder how they got internet, but like, wow, Kim Jong-un is listening to us.
Cause what if it, yeah, internet. What if it was it? Obviously, it would.
Oh my god, I'm becoming Dennis Rodman.
And suddenly we're on, like, we're being asked to fly over there and interview him.
Oh, yeah, the interview was like, give him this piece of gum. What?
No, you gotta shake his hand.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
There was a handshake.
That would be so terrifying. Like, could you imagine? Like, because.
But like, Dennis Rodman seems to be living a pretty decent life, though. Like, I mean, he's not.
Does he live over there full time? Rodman, do you live over in North Korea full time and you just go visit?
No, I think he just visits because he's, I don't know.
Do you think when he got back, the government was like, we need to talk?
No, 100%. I think he said something about it.
Do you think he told him something? Like, no. And then later on complained about it to like keep up his appearance?
I'm willing to bet that they told him not to tell anything or else they were going to.
Do you think both ways, like, do you think the U.S. government before he left was like, don't say
anything? Or did they know?
I don't know. I never really looked into that. I just like, what the hell is Rodman doing in North Korea? Like, out of all the people, how's this flamboyant ass basketball player just in North Korea?
I guess Homeboy's a fan or something, right? Because he got invited out there.
Yeah, it was like he went out there and he played like basketball and hung out with him and everything. And
I think he like did like an exhibition thing for him or something like that.
And then he did that video and he's like ranting off about the U.S. government and shit.
Oh, jeez, like, oh, man. God. Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman used to be a goat, dude.
He was a stud. Carmen Electra for a while.
Yeah, they got married in Vegas. It was like he got told to like go to Vegas and do like this, just like cool off because I guess he was having issues with his teammates. So they told him to go to Vegas because he wanted to go to Vegas, but they had to like play the next day or something like that. And like they told him to go and I think that's when he got married. He got married in Vegas, I believe.
In between game 5 and 6 in the playoffs. But yeah, it's that threw me off. And then all of a sudden I started thinking, I'm like, well, when he came back, do you think they like pulled him aside and was like, what did you see? What did you do? Did he tell you anything specific? Like, I'm sure he got like the rundown. There's no way.
Oh, there's no way when you go down there, they're not gonna be like, okay, you're fine. No, you especially you come back and it's like, no, we gotta watch this dude and make sure he's not involved in anything. Yeah.
And then you gotta think too, like when he got there, because he was requested by their leader, do you think when he got there they still like pulled him aside and was like, you were gonna talk to him this way, or do you think he just like
100%
got off a flight and then went right to him?
100%. They were probably like, yeah, no, we gotta brief you and make sure you don't say anything that's gonna piss him off and make him like kill you.
Yeah. Because then that's gonna start a thing. Can you imagine if a war started between North Korea and the United States over Dennis Rodman?
I don't think it would.
Well, I mean, like, if they, like, publicly execute him, like, let's say they publicly executed him on TV in North Korea, he's technically a U.S. citizen. Even if you don't like the guy, he's a U.S. citizen that's being executed by an enemy of the state. Enemy. And therefore, it's, like, it's so different than just picking some random Joe Schmo off a plane and then executing him in public. Like, it's still going to be a thing. Like,
I think they could arrest. I think they could arrest him. Yeah, the killing's kind of a gray area, just like the basketball player they got taken out in Russia. It's like they haven't done much for her, which I don't really care.
I thought they traded off a prisoner for her.
I don't believe so. Oh. But I'm not sure. But it's
I didn't really.
I don't know, man. I feel like if you break a law somewhere else, it's like you goofed it, dude. Like especially
an enemy of the country you're from.
Not just that. Okay, so gonna keep this one short, even though it's like a thing on Facebook, whatever, like on the internet. You messed up in another country. People mess up. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
You are working for an organization that's supposed to be, that flew you out there to play or do whatever, and they let you mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the organization goofed it. The WNBA goofed it. Like you should have somebody to tell you, don't do this, don't do that. Unless she did it on her own. I mean, maybe
it was. Yeah, and that's the thing.
But like, you're never gonna know the truth.
Yeah, like let's say like work sent you out to Germany because we work for a German company.
Yeah.
Let's say you went over to Germany and they're like, let's say Germany is like you don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
They're very anti-drinky, which they aren't.
Well,
they have a lot of good beer there. But let's say you go there, and they're like, you cannot drink over there. And then you bring over a six pack, like whatever. Like what you said made a lot of sense. You're going to another country. You need to respect their laws, no matter how absurd they seem or whatever, if they don't line up with your things. You're a guest in their area. Doesn't matter if they're the best friend of your country that you're from or worst enemy. If you're going onto their territory, you need to respect their things, whether you agree with them or not.
It's kind of like as if you're used to carrying a gun all the time, and then you go somewhere where they're like, you can't do that, like Canada.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Carry a gun and then just be mad when they get you?
Well, they're going to be like...
No, that's part of the country. There's rules in the country. There's laws.
Yeah, F off. You're not... This isn't there.
No, don't F off. You're going to jail.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be terrifying to go to jail in another country.
Yeah, have you ever watched the show Locked Up Abroad?
That's what I was getting to, because we've talked about that one.
Such an anxiety trip.
Oh man,
like
you dwelled into it. I kind of watched a little bit, but I didn't really watch too much of it.
There was this one episode. This dude got caught with, I think he had weed on him or something.
The weeds?
But he was in like, I want to say like Turkey or something. He got caught, and it's like very, very, very illegal there. It's not like, here's a drug charge. It's going to be on your record. Pay this fee. It's like, I think it was Turkey. It might not have been. But this guy went over to another country with illegal drugs that are very, very bad there.
Mm-hmm.
Gets caught. they don't even give him a chance to, like, because it's not every country you get a chance to, like, call your family. Sometimes you just locked up and you're just
missing. The laws are different. Yeah. So it's like that.
And so he gets locked up. He was only there for vacation. He gets locked up. His family doesn't hear from him for like 10, 15 years.
They just automatically think that he just died out there.
Yeah, they think he died or he just ran away. So he's in jail and
15 years?
Yeah. Ooh. And I think it was with the jail that he was in for the crime that he committed, he only got like 5 hours of free time out of his cell.
Hmm.
And his cell was super tiny. It was like the size of like a bathroom, but it was individual cells, so he didn't have a cellmate. But they were like clay walls, so you don't have windows and stuff like that, but they're like reinforced with steel or something, so you can't get out, obviously. Yeah. It's a prison. But so he was in this cell for 15 years. He only got 5 hours of like freedom a day. And I think they said like three of them or something, they force you to walk around a pole. Like you just sit there and you just walk around in circles for like those hours or whatever. And they use like whips and shit, like legitimate, like they torture you because it was like the equivalent of a maximum security prison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of the crime he committed was very frowned upon. And so he finally escaped because they would like bring, because it was on like an island, and they bring like boats in with supplies or whatever. And he ended up hijacking a boat, and he got the boat to the shore. He got to the shore. I guess it's a country that had a feud with their neighbor, basically. He gets to the border, gets arrested by the other country because they thought he was a spy. And they're yelling at him in their language.
And he's like,
ah. And he's not understanding it. So they're like, oh, he's from there because he's not speaking our language. And he gets arrested for like, I think it was like 6 months. Because they interrogated him and they thought he was a spy. And then once they realized like his situation and everything, they allowed him to talk to the embassy and call home and everything. And he like explained what happened and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were like, well, why did you lock up our citizen or whatever? And they're like, they broke our law, this is our law. And they really couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was for like, I think he had like an ounce of weed on him or something. Some
jeez.
Minuscule amount, but over there.
But over it's there, it's illegal. It's illegal.
Yeah. It's like, if you're traveling to another country, make sure you keep up to date on their laws. You need to know
the
laws.
Because even if it's like the most obscure thing that you've never gotten in trouble for.
Red on Tuesdays.
Which honestly, like the weed thing, that's, you should have already kind of been like, hey, like, drugs, look into this. Like, you probably shouldn't have it. If you can't have it here, then
you probably
shouldn't have it anywhere else.
Yeah.
But like, if you don't know them, don't do it. But like, there's some that like are probably like so obscure that you're like, I've done that my whole life and I've never like walked like jaywalking. Like, you don't know, maybe some other country. It's like, no, you broke that law. You
crosswalk or you don't walk.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like just absurd because like, if you go to that, like, if you went to, like, any other country, it would have been fine. But it was, like, one of the countries with the harshest penalty for that specific charge. And I'm like, you didn't even bother to look that up?
Yeah.
And I'm like...
But that's what I'm saying is, like, the fact that it was that, it's like, dude, it's already illegal in so many other places. Like, come on, look that up.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you were, like, smoking a cigarette somewhere, like, you know, yeah. Which you don't know. That could also be something breaking the law, like, doing certain things. But there's also, like, laws that I've seen, like, people talking about, like, in England. It's like, you're not allowed to walk a certain fish on, like, a Tuesday across, like, Parliament or something like that. Like, there's, like, these laws that are written from, like the 1700s?
Yeah, it was probably a law specific because there was, like, this one guy that kept doing it. He's like, it's not illegal. It's not illegal. And they're just like, pass this law to get this weirdo out.
Get him out of here. It smells like fish outside every day. Like,
yeah, why is he walking a fish?
But they, it's like, stuff like that. Like, some of them are really outdated, you know? Yeah,
like... The United States has some of those weird laws too. Yeah. I can't think of any off the top of my head. But like, you get those ones like, oh, you can't milk a cow on
like the third Tuesday of like November or
outside
facing east. Like,
yeah.
What happened? The cheese went bad that day or something? Or
yeah, what? What causes? Was it just a string of bad luck and that's what they wanted to blame on it to move on?
But like, in turn, it's like, that's like when there wasn't that many people in those towns, like, to make those laws, it was like, that was it. Like,
you got Dave over here being an asshole every Tuesday.
This guy's being a dick, milking his cow while I'm trying to shower.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, but...
No, yeah, dude. So just, yeah.
That locked up abroad stuff, though.
Yeah, watch... If you want to have, like, a little anxiety attack for, I think it's, like, 45-minute episodes...
Which one was the one that you told me that the dude was locked in a room that he couldn't sit in, but he couldn't stand in or something like that? Like, he couldn't stand up straight, but he had, like, like it was narrow enough to where he couldn't crouch down because his knees would hit or something. You told me about that. It was like one of the torture. It was like a prison cell.
It was like in Indonesia or something. And it, once again, it was a drug charge. If you're traveling to another country and you have like controlled narcotics or something,
don't
please look it up.
Probably don't.
So this guy was running drugs from. He's running opium.
That would make sense.
Or something like that from China to Australia or something like that. And I guess he'd done it like 5 or 6 times. And I guess
also don't run drugs.
Yeah, like, don't run drugs.
That's not.
But like, because people will notice if they see the same person like through their gates like every month out of nowhere.
Yeah, you can only get lucky so much.
Yeah.
Before you get caught.
So he was running drugs from China to Australia, and I guess the layover flights and somewhere in Indonesia, like you have to stop there or something. And he stayed for the night or something like that.
Mm.
Well, the airport security was kind of getting fishy to where out of nowhere, this one guy who's a foreigner to this area that doesn't really speak Chinese or
Indonesian or whatever. Or, yeah.
I don't know what they're what their language is.
I think it's Indonesian.
Like, so this guy is just coming through out of nowhere. All of a sudden he's like on monthly things. So they pull him aside for a random check, and the guy had gotten so comfortable going through that he was just keeping it in his duffel bag because I guess they had a weird, like,
like the
scanner
like the,
wasn't seeing it in the duffel
like their,
bag.
Their TSA wasn't, like, catching it or whatever, so they're like,
yeah,
whatever.
Like, their normal.
See,
like,
and that's the thing. Do you get lax on those things? And the more you do it, you get comfortable? Yeah, no.
And then, so he got arrested, and the prison cells were, like, very small cubicles. Like, the cell that you were in wasn't the cell you sleep in. They moved you every night.
Hmm.
And so the cell that you stayed in for the majority of your day, it was super small to where, like you said, he couldn't really stand up all the way because he was taller.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it wasn't enough to sit. It was like a 2x2 square that
dude,
they put you in.
Dude, that'd be so terrifying.
And he was in, it was like, what is it called? They call it, it's like the hole.
Yeah.
What is it called? Solitary confinement.
Oh, that's
what it is.
Yahtzee.
Slap the knee. Yeah, it was like solitary confinement, but that was his everyday. It wasn't like you're being punished for not getting along with the general population.
That was just the punishment that everybody got.
Yeah, because it was such a high crime, they had plenty of cells for it because they don't take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
Take up a lot of doors. So,
fuck, dude.
Speaking of, I got a thing about doors in a minute.
Terrifying.
So, yeah, and he was in there, and he was in there for like 30 years before they finally released him. And by the time he was released, I guess his knees had worn down so much that it was just bone on bone. There was no cartilage in between.
Ah.
And I was like, oh.
Oh, bud.
But yeah, random thing I learned when we were
watching
TV
doors?
The other day. About doors?
Hmm.
So there's a dude. He's like one of the richer people in China. His business is doors. With all those condos that they build, all the buildings they've been building like crazy.
So he's the source.
He's the source that the government goes to for doors. His door company is so damn lavish that it's like a 20-story building or whatever that you drive your car into and you just drive. It's almost like if you're to drive through the mall, but everything along that's like lining the walls and everything is just doors. And he supplies the doors for like 90% of all the like projects that they have there, like all the apartments, all the condos, all the houses, all the businesses.
That's a lot, dude.
And I'm like, that's
doors.
Genius.
Doors.
Yeah, I was like...
Yeah, like, no, yeah.
He's the Pritchett of closets, but for doors. I don't know if you ever watched Modern Family. The dad has
a closet
business.
He's the closet guy.
But you think about it, like...
It's smart, dude.
Yeah. Look at a building, how many doors does a building have.
And honestly, that sort of business, it's like... I feel like that market's not like aggressive, like, you know, it's not like something where it's like, oh, you're selling this. It's like somebody bad can get a hand of it. Like whether or not it's a door, dude, like nobody hates a door salesman.
Yeah.
Like somebody's going to sell you doors. It's like, okay, that's all you're going to do. Like you're not a threat. You're not like a bad person. Like
you're just trying to sell me a door and I need a door. Like, and that's the thing. If you're one of the first ones into that business, you got it made.
Oh yeah.
But you can't, when you've got like a multi-billion dollar company that's doing that, you can't just
squeeze in there and be like, I'm going to start supplying doors.
Yeah.
You got to inherit that.
Yeah. And that's why I'm wild, like, especially dude. Where he has like contracts with like the governments over there and like the bigger like real estate places and everything that aren't doing too well. But
I feel like a lot of that stuff is like between selling them and having the patents on them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because like you said, like if he's got like all these specialty doors that are just like lavish and all that, like the more patents you have, the more you limit your
competition,
yourself to only you selling them.
Yeah.
Because then at that point, everybody has to get that model through you.
Yeah. Or like if you do like a custom size, let's say you make a door that's like 5 inches taller, 5 inches wider.
Mm.
And you convince everybody in that area to make their door frames that size, but it's not a standard size. If they want to take and get a new door, they have to go through you.
Yeah.
Because
like you break one of those doors, it's like that door's different. It's that's what you do. You patent a door that's like slightly different so it never fits with anything somebody else sells.
Yeah.
But
you sell it as like a little wider. You can get your furniture through it because everybody knows the struggle of trying to get a couch through the door hole.
Pivot.
Yeah, no left. No, my left. Like and so everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And if you made a door that's 5 inches wider, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I got room.
Oh, geez, there you go.
And then you patent it.
But then in turn, it's like you got to sell the door. You got to sell the frame.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You capitalize on that. Companies that are building. That way it's already like they're going to have to build the door frame either way. Build it to your door.
And then you just...
It's genius. Why is that
so smart the more I think about it?
Because
it's like you build a whole building with only your size doors, and then suddenly... You're the only one that can get the new doors.
You own that building as far as doors go. And if it's like patented or copyrighted or something to you specifically, dude, no one else can make that door.
Dude, that's genius.
Yeah.
I kid you not. That's like probably one of the smartest.
This guy he may not be the brightest bulb in the shed.
No, no.
He may not be the smartest.
You're running a door business, but like.
And he took full
advantage. 100%, bud. That's wild.
That's genius.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's not book smart. That's street smart.
Oh, yeah.
That's a PhD in street smart.
Well, and it's like you're basically like doubled down on yourself. You made the doors. You sold into a building, but you made the doors so that only you can sell the doors in the future to that building. Yeah. Like,
and when they're building these condos that are like 35 stories that have like 1,500, 2,000 rooms in them.
Mm-hmm. It's like that's
2,000 doors.
Say 1,500, 2,000 doors at like 50, 60 bucks even. Because you're going to give them a discount for when they're buying that much.
Yeah, when they're buying in bulk.
So like 15 to 2,000 times 50, that's...
And it's weirdly a selling point. Like if you're looking at two apartments and they're the same price, similar location, but this one has an extra wide door, so moving furniture in is going to be easier.
Yeah. But well, besides the whole like I'm able to squeeze in there a little bit better with that door, like the fact that you made a door that's not the same as any door... That can be bought at like a Lowe's, Home Depot. That alone already like makes you more above in the market. Like, son of a biscuit.
Yeah.
That's wild, dude. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And I was like, God. And I'm like, how do I do something like that? But I'm like, I don't know. And that's the thing is like, he just capitalized on
doorknobs. That man probably sells his own doorknobs too.
I'm sure he does. I'm pretty sure he's got like his own like silent hinge that like. Instead of like the four screws that like hold it to the door on each hinge, maybe it's like three screw and the door like hinge is like
the hinge is like
dovetailed or something
to where it like glides instead of like squeak, like it prevents squeaking in the future and
it's
there's a science, dude. And
so it's silent.
The fact that there's a market on doors that's being capitalized that hard in another part of the world blows my mind.
But you think about it, like. Your house. How many doors do you have in your house?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, like nine, ten doors.
Just,
like ten.
Let's just round it.
Let's just say the ten. Ten for shits.
Yeah, 10 doors. Sell them $100 a piece. $1,000.
That's just one house.
Yeah, and this is one house, and you capitalize on like an entire condo. $10,000, $15,000. Let's just say,
or an entire like housing development.
Yeah, and like a door is not $100. I'm just doing that for the simplicity.
Oh no! I've looked into doors; they're expensive.
Yeah, but yeah, and I'm like,
and the fact that there's just so many genius, like applications bro. For that
genius.
That is honestly probably one of the smartest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, dude, I'm just like, wow.
And it all based around doors.
Yeah. So it's like, how do I capitalize on that? Make a light bulb with a different socket. Yeah.
See, but in that sort of scenario, it's like at that point you got to sell the bulb and the socket.
What you do? This is how somebody wants to become rich. If they want to, they can take my idea. Just give me credit once.
Yeah, make a special.
A light bulb that uses a normal wall plug. You just throw the light bulb like a nightlight, but it's a full-size light bulb that can light up a room. And then you change all the sockets in the ceiling to that.
Well, they already have the ones that's like a...
They got the adapter.
The adapter that you screw into the socket. So that's...
And so, like, that's a...
That's in turn that.
Because that adapter is only, like, $1. But you got to think, like, even that adapter alone, like, the person, if they would have patented that adapter...
Honestly, the more... The things that are going to take off and, like, make that kind of money in the future are going to be things that are adaptable to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, making, like... A special, like, either socket or something that, like, that'll go on every single thing that you want to hook up. And it's all, like, just, like, removable, like, quickly. Like, not like, oh, I got to push this. Like, a different way to like, hook up to stuff.
Yeah.
Just, well, like, the new thing was the, for faucets, outdoor faucets, where it's not a faucet or, like, a thing that you screw on. And it's just push and twist and it instantly water.
Yeah.
And it's like a new sort of faucet for outdoors that doesn't, like, get corroded, doesn't get damaged because it's all internal in the wall.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that, dude. Like, the stuff that's adaptable, that's changing old designs and making them new and more efficient.
Yeah, looking at something that's been like that for years.
For years. Like doors. That's one.
Okay, another thing that was kind of on that subject, but they didn't do it for the money. They did it for the safety. The 3-point seatbelt that you use every day.
Mm-hmm.
In your car was made by Volvo, but because the guy who made it wanted people to be safe in their vehicles, they never patented it. They kept it open for other car companies to use it. And because, like, Volvos are an extremely safe car. Like, they put safety above everything.
They're safe. Ugly as hell, but they're safe.
Yeah. But they put safety above everything.
Hmm.
And Volvo was putting the 3-point seatbelt in their cars in, like, the 60s. When lap belts were not even a mandatory thing yet.
You ever see some of the old designs on seatbelts?
Yeah.
Some of the ideas?
Big belt.
It's all that, or like they have the ones on their heads.
Oh, yeah. I saw the one like,
on their necks.
It's like
a
safety restraint that went around their neck. It's like, Jesus Christ. Imagine getting strangled by your car at like 50 miles an hour.
Imagine getting, decapitated probably.
Oh, yeah. And so, or like, have you ever seen the old like car seats? That they were, like, trying to, like, get people, like...
I've seen the ones that they, like, the captain's chairs that they did in, like, some cars. It was, like, they'd rotate all the way around and stuff like that.
The one that gets me is, I think it was in, like, the 20s or 30s. It was, like, a... It was a... Like, a baby play area that was marketed so babies in cities could get outdoors and get fresh air while they lived in those, like, double-stack apartments. And it was, like, a bird cage that you basically put in your window... And your kid could play in that little cage and be outside.
Well, between that and, like, what was it? Like, they have, like, the dog carriers that, like, you would put your dog outside and they would, like, hold them.
Yeah, and, like, it was,
so they wouldn't be in the car. That was weird.
And, it's weird to think, like, how safety was overlooked back in the day.
Oh, yeah. But they didn't understand a lot of it because, like, the car market, it's, like...
It was new.
Well, what back then, the top car was, like, going, like, maybe 110 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Like safety wasn't...
Selling
the data wasn't there to need it. Does that make sense? Like, yeah,
like that old truck I had, that 59, it didn't have seatbelts.
Yeah, oh no,
didn't have seatbelts and it had a metal dash.
They didn't care, but at that point, like, that kind of truck was more designed for like farm work, so they're not expecting you to be on the highway doing like 90, you know.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the seatbelt thing that Volvo did, when the guy made it. I think they interviewed him or something. He was like, well, why didn't you like patent it so Volvo would be the only ones that could like offer that? He's like, I wanted people to be safe. There's so many more lives I could have saved.
Which that's kindness.
By making it open market.
I get that. That's.
Yeah.
But now we have these big companies capitalizing on seatbelts and it's like.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that cars will ever get to the extreme point where like a 5-point harness becomes like the norm in it?
Not
like obviously like
not,
McLaren
not,
has it. But, yeah. Like, do you think, like,
I don't think cars will. I don't think cars will ever become... Cars on the road will never become to that point. I think once we start propelling ourselves upward, like once we start either having vehicles that can fly, you know what I mean? Like, a car that can drive on the road isn't going to require a 5-point harness, in my opinion, ever. Because I don't think our roads are even made for anything that would require that.
Yeah.
But opposed to like a plane or like a ship, like once we have vehicles that can from here go straight up, you're going to need a 5-point because there's more variables in like the way you would wreck in a plane, right? Yeah. Like at that point you need it.
You replace your airbags with parachutes?
Yeah.
I have a question. Why do airplanes have seat belts but school buses don't?
Because of how stout a school bus is, and that thing probably never hits 70 miles an hour.
Did you ever see that video of the kid that, like, they hit a pole or something, the kid, like, goes flying in the background? Like,
oh, yeah. I've seen the ones where the kids are in the back jumping, and they jump, and when, like, they hit a bump, and they fly and hit the ceiling.
But what is the point of a seatbelt in an airplane? If it's going down, I don't think a seatbelt's going to stop you on that impact.
I think it's more of to keep you aligned in the controls so that if you rotate, you don't fall out.
But like a passenger plane? Like a 747?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to keep you in your seat if you unexpectedly need to do a hard maneuver. Like, if you're flying and, like, you take a sharp turn to avoid something, I mean, you're not going to crash, but, like, that'll keep you at least centered instead of, like, tosses you to the window and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, hold on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like, that's the only reason I could say.
I've seen that before, but I never looked into why.
I think it's just to keep you from, like, flying around in case you have, like, an unexpected roll.
But why wouldn't a school bus have seatbelts?
Because I think it's because they're not rated for the speed.
I guess like school buses and like normal transportation buses, they don't have seatbelts, do they? I don't think they do.
No.
But like a train has a
seatbelt. Like transportation doesn't have it. But I'd imagine like for trains school buses. Seatbelts? Trains?
Yeah, like I can't remember.
I don't know when the last time. They didn't have them on Harry Potter, so I don't think they do.
Hogwarts. They have buses.
Yeah. It's all magic, bro. No, I don't. I don't know what the reason for public transportation to not have seatbelts, but planes have it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like the plane thing is just to keep you from falling out of your seat. You know what I mean? Whoa. Like in a bus, I would have thought that it's because they're not traveling at speeds high enough. Like,
yeah, but like you get those Greyhound buses that go from like state to state and do like long travels. Like they got to get up to freeway speed.
That's what I'm saying. But like a school bus, it's like how many school buses do you really travel from state to state constantly?
And the ones that carry like
football teams. Is that what you're gonna say?
And, like, basketball
I think
teams
for those for a lot. To, like, but a lot of those are like chartered buses.
Yeah,
they don't use high school buses anymore. I think when they used to use high school buses to do that, it was like in the 80s.
Somebody's listening and they have the answer to this. They're probably just
freaking. You know what? I really hope I'm making a lot of you mad with my non-correct information, but I'm just theorizing here.
Oh yeah, we know.
I am shooting it from the hip here. It's just an assumption. It's just what I think would be the reason. I'm not gonna look up the facts.
Yeah,
I should probably don't fact check me, okay?
Yeah, no.
But if somebody knows why they don't have them on public transportation, I'd like to know. Like,
yeah, that'd definitely be
maybe
something.
Get you more involved
this. This is just like the what was it, like episode one or two, when we talked about like somebody choking, everybody was getting mad because it's like, no, you save the person choking. It's like, yeah, well, no, we are gonna save the person yeah, choking.
We're talking about the legality them, and like, yeah, the morality of it, like, yeah. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, but I'm also not gonna take and let somebody just choke,
like, I think you guys are assuming that we're a lot smarter than we are.
You're assuming we're a lot smarter, but we're not as like,
I'm not that hands-on. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I'm not a professional in any way.
No, but the bus thing, that would be interesting to know. Like, why don't they do seatbelts? It's got to be something that's like, oh, okay, I get that.
Like, maybe it's like, so you get in a wreck, you don't have, like, one person, like,
being. You know what? I'm just going to unmake you all mad and about to look it up, because now I'm mad. Okay, the only thing I have that says, why do school buses not have seatbelts? NHTSA decided the best way to provide crash protection to passengers and of large school buses is through a concept called compartmentalization, which requires, and I gotta click on the link now. Wait, what? I lost it. Okay. Compartmentalization. This requires that the interior of large buses protect children without them needing to buckle up. Through compartmentalization, children are protected from crashes by strong, closely spaced seats that have energy absorbing seat backs.
I mean, yeah, they're padded. That makes sense.
Small school buses with gross vehicle weight rating of 10,000 pounds or less must be equipped with lap and shoulder belts. It's at all designated seating positions. It just like depends on the vehicle weight and
the size.
And the buses have, I guess. I didn't know they had stuff like that in the back of the seats.
I mean, if you also kind of think about it, too, like,
they're big, dude. That's what I'm saying. Like, you hit a school bus, and unless it's a train hitting it, I'm pretty much the bus is going to fare out well.
Yeah, and then you got to think also, like, when you get onto a bus, in general, you go up like a few steps. So you're above like...
You're above a lot of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like a Honda hits you, it's not going to spear you.
Well, I mean, directly. Well, I mean, and you look at them like when you're driving next to a bus, like all the kids are up here.
Yeah.
So like you, even you T-bone that. And for the most part, you're going to hit dead on frame of the bus.
You're going to hit like bodywork. Yeah. It's going to be above you.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Hey, we all learned something today.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap this one up.
All right, guys.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
That was a good one.